This is Season 2, Episode 29 of the Language Mastery Show with Nelson Dellis. Here's a little sample of what's coming up.
Yeah, I think a big part of people's hesitation to want to memorize a lot of things or things that involve a lot of memorization is because it's tedious, it's not really fun, but I make it fun, and so do all of these memory athletes. The reason we're sitting there for hours memorizing numbers, we're not masochists, it's because we're actually having fun, believe it or not, because inside of our heads, what we're seeing, what's playing out is the best movie ever. With all the associations and things that we love that make us laugh, make us cry, make us angry, in some randomized order, that's just incredible to watch.
Welcome back to the Language Mastery Show. This is your host, John Fotheringham. Today's episode, I chat with Nelson Dellis, a memory athlete, four-time U.S. memory champion, a grandmaster of memory, a high-altitude mountaineer, author, speaker, and pretty much all-around cool dude. He's currently on a mission to reach conversational fluency in Dutch in just 1 year, using all of the memory tricks in his toolkit. All right, enjoy my chat with Nelson. Hey, Nelson, how's it going?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Not too shabby. So you're beat me to the fudge. We're on the same brainwave. You're in Miami. I'm in Washington State, about 3 hours east of Seattle. So we're kind of kitty corner of the U.S. looks like.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. 3 hours
east of Seattle. Oh,
okay. More inland. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Over the Cascade Mountains and over in the the desert, which people don't associate Washington with desert, but it's actually like a tumbleweed.
Really?
Yeah, like actual desert, yeah.
What's the name of your town?
I live in Richland, which is part of what's called the Tri-Cities.
Okay.
It's actually where the Hanford site is, where they built the bomb for World War II.
Really?
Yeah, and there's still like an active nuclear plant out there and research facilities, but...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm looking at pictures. I see what you mean in terms of desert.
Wow. I grew up over on the west side of the state, in the suburbs of Seattle, but my wife's from here, and we're basically digital nomads at this point, and so we decided for now just to come live near her family because her sister just had a baby, and we wanted to be able to be near her folks. She had indulged my preferences of green for the first 5 years of our marriage, and so as a she describes herself as a solar-powered lizard, and so I thought it was fair that we let her get some sun for a while. So here we are. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Cool. Yeah.
And I see that you met your wife. I saw in the book that your memory, adventures kind of had a hand in that too, which is kind of cool.
What do you mean?
Well, you'd said that you'd run into a friend and you'd use the kind of the memory techniques to remember his name and then his phone number, and then he brought along her to that meetup.
That's right. Oh, right. That's pretty cool. That's right. I forgot I wrote about that in the book.
That's how that happens. Yeah. When we write books, we're like, what did I say? Did I say that? I don't remember. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Because I say a lot of the same things, throughout my messaging. But, you say certain things a certain way in a book, and it's like, I don't know. You try to make it different. So I don't really know where I've said things or not.
I feel you. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't even know. Was it in a podcast? Was that in a book? Did I dream that? I don't know. What's up?
So do you have a book?
I do. I've written a couple, but my main book is
learning the Japanese one.
Japanese,
that's right.
Had been a digital book only for like 10 years. I've just been selling it through my site. And by popular demand, I finally bit the bullet and made it a physical book this last October.
Can you flip through it just quickly? I just want to see.
Yeah.
Is it pictures, a lot of pictures stuff? Or?
No, it's mostly.
I don't know. It's how to speak it. It's not necessarily.
It's more how to learn the language. Mm-hmm. Okay. I do get into a little bit of actual Japanese, but my main focus has always been giving people the kind of meta learning tools to be able to learn the language or really learn any language. I focus on Japanese mostly from a niching down point of view, but. Which I've begrudgingly done more and more over the last few years based on advice from other, successful, much more successful vloggers and writers. A lot of us start out, we're like, I just want to talk about all languages and how to learn.
And
then they're like, you're not going to attract anyone. Like, you're going to just be noise. You have to get a niche
that's
down.
True.
So,
Is your wife Japanese?
She's not.
I was just curious. Maybe that's the reason why I chose that language.
When I was in my 20s, I lived in Japan for a couple of years, and I had been dating a Japanese woman, and I always assumed that was going to be the case. She's actually American from the U.S. My younger brother, though, did marry a Japanese woman, so that kind of interestingly didn't worked out in the end. There's someone in our family, at least. So,
okay, that's too funny. Yeah,
and she had been living in Ukraine for a year before that, and been learning Russian, and so and had actually a series of Russian boyfriends. So it's kind of ironic for both of us to everyone's surprise that we actually married a fellow, you know, American. So
that's so funny. Okay, yeah. Interesting.
But anyway, yeah. So I know you probably have a lot on your plate with learning Dutch in a year, so I don't want to take too much of your time today.
No worries.
But yeah, so unfortunately, I didn't get to finish the book. I did make a valiant effort to start it, so I got enough in to, I think, get a kind of a feel for your approach and your philosophy, which is cool. I've dabbled a little bit in memory techniques and memory palaces, and I definitely applied a lot of memory, I don't want to use the word hacks, but tricks and memory enhancements when I was learning Japanese kanji. There's a book called Remembering the Kanji, RTK.
I think I've seen that.
Yeah, and he uses basically like very vivid stories.
Pictures.
Yeah, like kind of, you basically, you memorize first the little chunks that make up kanji called radicals, and then you make a story in your head based on those characters, as it were.
Cool.
So instead of trying to remember a random pile of strokes, just like instead of trying to remember a phone number, you know, you're making it some kind of narrative. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm certainly far from an expert on memory. So I'm really excited to get a chance to pick your brain a bit more on how folks can use these memory techniques to better learn languages. So
sure. Yeah. Can I ask you a quick question just before we start?
Yeah.
So I have this book called Chinesey. I know that you speak a bit of Mandarin.
I do. Yeah.
Do you read it too?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. So I was just curious.
Not perfectly,
like,
by any means, but yes,
okay. But is the Japanese script, it borrows a lot from Chinese, right?
Yes. Yeah. So Japanese, they over time and in a very hodgepodge, non-linear way, they borrowed Chinese characters from China to write Japanese.
I see.
And then for the most part, I would say it's about, well, it gets complicated because China, they simplified their characters in 1949, 1950 under communist rule. They went through like completely did an overhaul of the characters to simplify them with the goal of increasing literacy. I have very strong and mixed opinions about that. But for the most part, if you take what are called traditional Chinese characters and modern Japanese kanji, they're, I'd say, about 80% the same.
Oh, wow.
So if you can read Japanese, you can kind of, you know, work your way through reading Chinese
together,
and vice versa.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Always wondered that. Cool.
Yeah. So it's a nice skill. So I actually lived in Taiwan after living in Japan, and they used the traditional characters there. And I had a huge head start learning to read Chinese for that reason. So
fascinating.
Pronunciation's different. There's patterns, but meanings can even be a little different sometimes. But for the most part, it's like, it'd be like if you speak Spanish, then learning Italian would be that much easier. Kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
I got it. Cool.
So you're learning Dutch in a year, which is, cool and exciting, and I think definitely doable, at least if your goal is like conversational fluency, not obviously you know, understanding everything you hear or read, which I still don't have that for English. I'm a native speaker,
exactly.
4 years old.
That's
right.
So yeah, same here.
So let's start there. Like what led to the goal of learning Dutch and also trying to do it in a year?
So my family is French Belgian, and I grew up speaking French. It was actually my first language.
Really? I didn't know
just
that.
Because, yeah. So my dad is from the Walloon side, the French speaking side, and probably was, I consider him French. He grew up, I think he was born in the Walloon side of Belgium, but moved immediately to France and was raised there. So he's French, speaks French, very French, has a French accent when he speaks English. All the mannerisms, everything. And then my mother was from the Flemish side of Belgium. And, you know, most people in Belgium, especially the Dutch side, speak French as well. The French don't necessarily speak the Flemish.
That's telling.
For whatever reasons. You know,
we can hypothesize, but yes.
Yeah. But anyways, they, when we were born and growing up, they spoke French to each other in the household. So that's what we picked up. We moved around a lot. I lived in Paris for a while, London, Miami, back to London. And, we were always in international schools and, kind of speaking French at home. And so that became one of my first languages, but, obviously I speak fine English. That eventually became the language that we, that took over. But, I've never forgotten my French, but I have always wanted to learn what the hell my mom was saying into the phone to her sisters and brothers. Yeah. And, that sounded really weird and a bit vulgar to the ear, but, you know, I thought it sounded really fascinating and interesting, but it was one of these languages, like I cannot understand a single word, you know, I hear my mom say these phrases over and over again. I can say some of them because right. they, you know, remind me of those moments, but I don't know what they mean. Yeah. So it made sense. I wanted to do something that I've always wanted to learn language. I've wanted to learn Russian, Chinese. I've even started, you know, with not much success. But I thought, you know, it'd be great to learn a language with and have a meaning, like a purpose,
have a why. Yeah, that's so important.
I think that probably was the main reason why I chose this, because I failed in the past, and not because I suck. I obviously have I'm a smart guy. I
four
I
times well U.S. memory champion for those sure. listening. Yeah,
but I just had no reason other than hey, it would be cool, and that's not yeah. enough. So Dutch became the thing. Flemish and Dutch, essentially the same. The pronunciation is a little different for Flemish, but for all intents and purposes, I was learning Dutch. And then I work on the intricacies of it, of the Flemish side of it, along the way.
Is it considered a dialect of Dutch, or is it, I'm actually not too familiar with this. So, or is it yeah. considered technically a different language?
No, I'd say it's a dialect, although I feel like the Flemish or the Dutch might be insulted by that.
Yeah. What is a dialect and what is a language is so political. So that's exactly, probably a whole other yeah. conversation.
But it's the exact same written language. Okay. It's just the pronunciations. I think it's like the difference between like someone speaking British and English in terms of accent.
Got it.
You know, but, and then there's different phrases and words that one would use, the other wouldn't, you know, you'd hear that and be like, well, that's not very Dutch. That's very Flemish, you know, and the other way around. Yeah. And then the why a year? Well, I don't know. I like these kind of intensive projects. I like to kind of close them off and be like, well, not that I'm going to finish and never speak it again after that, but I like to kind of measure progress from here to there. And when I have a set goal in mind, I think it helps with the why, you know?
100%. Yeah. Yeah. It's the thought just occurred to me that this is kind of a meta Pomodoro, you know, it's like a set, yeah. a giant set, like sure, time constraint yeah. that kind of increases probably your efficacy and efficiency and motivation.
Yeah. That's and cool. I work well with that. And that shows clearly from my memory championship titles, because, you know, there'd be a memory competition, a date in mind, and, right. and the year before I'd say, okay, that's my plan to win it. I have a year. What am I going to do? You know, and you kind of plan that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, this is a really, I think, underappreciated component of learning any kind of longitudinal, complex, biopsychosocial skill, like a language or a sport or a martial art, sure. anything like this. Like, it's going to take you a fair amount of time, and you're going to go through this very gradual up and down process where it's hard to feel progress in the moment, and it's really yeah. easy to get discouraged. But having that, like, clear objective or goal, I think, yeah. it's so powerful. And whether it's a year or like Benny Lewis doing, you know, his fluent 3 months thing, or it's yeah. 10 years, whatever the time frame is, I think having yeah. that time frame is so important.
Totally, yeah.
So going back to kind of the memory championship side of things a little bit here. Sure. In fact, all the way back to the kind of origin story of becoming a memory champion. I know there's kind of some tough memories involved in this, and you can say as much or as little as you want. But kind of what was the genesis of this part of your life?
Yeah. So I, my story is this is, you know, my grandmother had Alzheimer's, kind of in my early to mid 20s. And, she passed away. She was French. She was on my dad's side. Mm-hmm. And, I didn't get to see her that often. So every time I did, especially in those later years, I feel like the impact on her transformation from the previous time I'd seen her was always so drastic, and it just hit me every time. Just like, I couldn't believe that this was happening to someone's brain, someone who was so lively and sweet and, you know, able to bake amazing cakes and cookies and stuff. And then suddenly she's just not there anymore. Yeah. She was just a shell. Right. And, I remember there was a summer where I was climbing, in a very remote place, didn't have access to anything. And that's when she passed away. And, I think when I came back to Earth or whatever, and I learned of that, it was just, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And I don't know. So it was just kind of the timing where I was in life, kind of intellectually and in my studies and everything. And that moment that just kind of said, you know what, I want to do something for myself. And I'd kind of dabbled and heard about this memory championship and memory techniques, but hadn't given it much time. And I decided that I wanted to work on my memory and see if I could strengthen it. Not that it was bad, but so that I build these habits potentially that might prevent me from ending up like her.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a hell of an origin story, and I'm sorry to go through that kind of suffering, but
no,
at least it's, you turned lemons into lemonade, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what am I going to do? She had it,
right.
She passed away. It's a thing that happened, and you respond how you want to it. And for me, that meant turn it into something for myself. I never had the intention to win anything or be the best at anything. It was just like a personal goal, kind of in honor of her, but also for in honor of my future self. Because seeing her go out like that was just, it's not fun to see. And it's not fun for, everyone around her in terms of the family close to her. It's such a devastating disease for everyone.
Yeah.
In the in the radius of that person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not that we should ever try to compare suffering or diseases, but it does seem like the same thing happened to my grandparents and on my mom's side. And it's, I also having that in my own genetic predisposition, even though I'm definitely of the mindset that we have a lot of levers we can pull in terms of epigenetics.
There's a lot of,
my wife and I, in fact, are both nutritionists. That's where we met, is in our nutrition class when we're getting certified. So I'm doing a lot on that side of like kind of the nutrition and the fitness movement, like as much of on the physical side as I can, but curious on this kind of the more mental fitness side of this, of how memory techniques and this. And I even wrote a post a few years back where I said, you know, forget Sudoku and these, and you know, word puzzles. Like, why not learn a language? Stuff, you can't use a Sudoku puzzle. You can use a language to connect with another culture.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I don't always say like, hey, you have to memorize every single day to have, you know, a healthy brain.
Yeah.
But I think any type of thing where it's not easy for your mind, I think that's what you want to try to do a little bit of every day.
Yeah.
Kind of consistently and stick to it. So, for me, that was memorizing faster and faster. And even when I got good at it and could do it really well, you know, still not easy because then I just want to get faster and that becomes harder. So it's always something I can push myself, in.
And I, just a little from what I've read, I don't know a whole lot about this kind of community and world, but I know some of the challenges you guys do in these competitions and in your training are, you know, things like memorizing decks of cards in a limited amount of time, memorizing a long list of things, memorizing long numbers, things like that.
Yeah.
I think because of that, that's what you are tested on in those environments. I, as someone who wants to apply this to language learning, I kind of resisted this whole world because I didn't see the practical application in language learning beyond just memorizing lists of words, which I don't think is a very effective way to learn a language anyway. So walk me through now how you're applying the memorization skills and methods and principles that you learned to become a memory champion now in learning Dutch.
Just to touch on what you said there, it's very common for people to look at these competitions and what I do and what I train and be like, oh, you're memorizing cards? That's cool. You're memorizing huge numbers, like 1,000 digits. When would I ever need that? Right. And obviously I'm partial to these competitions. I want to do well and break records. I'm in
it's
that
a sport.
World, but
I learned the new word in your book. I think it was memory athlete. I thought that's such a cool word. Yeah.
But, you know, I liken it to when people go to the gym and they're, you know, you do legs today or you do back another day, you know, like a lot of those isolated movements, you're really not ever going to do that like that. In the real world, it's like you fall over, you know, you got to use your legs, your arms, core to get back up. It's all one together, right? But because you trained each of those muscles and those isolated movements together, you can, you know, accomplish more with your entire body because of it. So it's the same kind of idea, right? Even though I'm training these specific events, cards, numbers, names, whatever, underneath it all, it's kind of the same idea and principles. But practicing each of those, first of all, gives me something to aim for. I know what my previous time is. It's very measurable. Mm-hmm. I know what I'm aiming for in terms of trying to beat a record. So I can see progress, which really helps, right. I think, with training in general.
And motivation. Yeah.
And motivation, right? And secondly, I'm just building different ways to get better at the process, which this process can then be applied to other things that are not in these competitions, like a language, let's say. So a big part of, I guess, where I started with the language, and we'll probably dive more into this with the Drops app, but was, in my mind, to memorize a large amount of words and their meanings. I thought that would be a great place for someone like me to start. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a different approach than what I typically have done. And like I said, my past hadn't been too successful. So, cause what I knew is that I could memorize a lot of words, 1,000, 2,000, and, get them to stick really well, because that's what I can do very quickly. So, right. And I recognize that language learning is not just memorization, but at some point you do have to have information in your head.
Right. So if it's a component. Yeah.
It's a component.
It's a checkbox. It's kind of how I think of it. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's kind of the tedious part of learning a language, because I'd rather be speaking it, listening to it, enjoying it.
Right.
But if you can get through that part quicker, more efficiently, why not? You know, some people are so against memorization as a... it's a thing, but it's like, it's unavoidable. It is part of the process. Just
I think probably what it is it's been for so long, especially in traditional classroom-based academic language learning, that's been the entire focus maybe for so long. And then people come out of 6 years of Spanish and can't understand or say a damn word in actual speaking. So I think probably it's that pendulum was so swung so far the wrong way for so long that, and I've done this too. I've kind of come back to the middle on this, where I used, for a long time I was like, you know, you don't need any of that. It's all a distraction. It's all a waste.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of in this middle area where I'm like, no, a little bit of memorization and conscious focus on vocabulary, these things can be extremely helpful and fast.
Yeah.
Just don't let that be like your entire language diet. You know, you need
a
balanced language diet. So
Because just knowing 2,000 words, even though that's probably most of the words you're ever going to encounter, doesn't make you any better at speaking the language or understanding it.
You still have to learn the collocations, the grammar. But you need to know those words. And so to your point, why not attack that first with these memory techniques that you know so well? So
exactly.
So you mentioned Drops. I've used Drops. I'm using it now. I kind of do the daily 5 minute minimum viable habit for now, which is, if people haven't used the app, I think this is actually one of the really smart design things they've done from a psychological point of view, is they limit your time to only 5 minutes a day. You can upgrade and then do as much as you want, which I've done, but I like that it limits it to this tiny little thing that, for myself as a recovering perfectionist, I tend to be binary. I'm like all on or all off.
And
I've really been learning to train myself to like, just start, just do a little bit. Inevitably I'll do more, but when it's some giant habit or undertaking, I'm going to put it off and put it off. Has that been your experience?
Yeah. And that's kind of part of the reason why I was so gravitated to that app, is because I liked how easy it was to start and how easy it was to be consistent, which I think is key. You know, even if you're really not learning much every time you do it, you're just consistently keeping yourself in this mind frame of I am learning Dutch or right. I am learning this language.
Habit of the habit.
If you kind of put that off,
yeah.
then eventually you're like, wait a minute. No, I'm not. I'm not in anything. Right.
Right.
But even if you're just doing 5 minutes a day, that's something. It sounds like nothing, but it's huge. Yeah. And I think it's one of the biggest things for people who really want to learn a language. And they buy the books, they maybe sign up for a course, but then they
don't do
they
it.
Just can't get started. Because it is a monumental task. It's really yes. intimidating to learn yeah. a language when you really think about it. So
And yeah. it's tricky. I always struggle with how to balance this in my messaging, but doing 5 minutes a day alone, obviously, is not going to be enough. Like, you're not going to get fluent in any no. desirable time frame. Right. Only doing 5 minutes, obviously. But I think your first habit, your first goal that you're trying to establish at the beginning, just like with starting to work out or something, your first goal is right. not to go to the gym and do an hour of CrossFit or whatever. You know, your goal is to be somebody, have the identity is I'm somebody who goes to the gym
yeah.
3 days a week, no matter what. That's it. That's the habit.
Yeah, yeah.
Then
yeah,
once yeah. that's developed, you know, I'm somebody who does 5 minutes every day, no matter what. Then that's established as your identity. Then you can start piling on doing those other books and those other video yeah. courses.
Maybe I do 5 minutes and a little bit extra of something else, right?
Exactly.
Because the other one's like, yeah, I heard that a similar kind of explanation in an interview with a guy on YouTube I follow called Matt Davella. Do you know him?
I don't. I'll have to check him out.
Yeah. Check him out. But I forget the guy he was interviewing. I don't remember everything. But they were saying that about getting started with working out. Yeah. You know, if you don't work out, right, but you want to, right? So it's like just go to the gym, right?
Exactly.
Just
you don't even have to work out.
Stand there for
exactly.
5 minutes, right?
Yep.
And go
yep.
home. You know, yep. do that once or twice or three times a week, and then eventually, you know, go for a 5 minute jog on the treadmill. You know, and right. it's like these incremental things. Like for me, that doesn't even make sense because I work out every single day for an hour at least.
Yeah,
and
it's part of your identity.
Thing. It's yeah. my identity right. exactly. So, but I get it. And there's yeah. other things in my life where I wish it were my identity, but it isn't. And I'm not consistent at it at all. So I think that's crucial. Yeah.
100%.
To learning any skill. Yeah.
Have you read any James Clear's stuff on habit formation?
Yeah. The Atomic Habits.
Yeah. That's where I kind of stole that idea from. Yeah. He talked the same
Maybe
thing.
Maybe that's even who he was interviewing then.
Oh, yeah. that would make sense. Because he talks about that. Like, yeah, just going to the gym and just standing there for a few minutes and then actually going home. It's like, it sounds so insane and so over the top, but or doing like flossing one tooth if you're trying to teach yourself yeah, to floss yeah, yeah. and then stopping.
Yeah.
But it can
that's
work.
What people need, man. And it's not easy. I'm not, like I said, I'm not perfect, but it that kind of stuff works.
Yeah. And it, especially I think for those of us, like again, that I think suffer from perfectionism or, you know, in psychology, they call it all or nothing thinking. And that's yeah. been bane of most of my adult life, but I'm working on it. I'm getting there.
Yeah. So another, I was going to say another good example is one of the things I wanted to learn this year is to do a Rubik's Cube blindfolded fast. And, I have all the information, you know, I know all the information, how to do it.
Yeah.
But I keep saying like, I gotta, you know, just like make sure I know it. And I just stop. I don't do it, you know,
right.
and I've started to do it in the last month and I've made progress, you know, but right. only because I started doing it. It's right. not enough to know how to do it. Right. You gotta do it.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
100%. I forget who said it. He had a quote like, we don't need more information. If transformation were about information, then everyone would be a billionaire and have 6-pack abs.
Right. Yeah. That's so true. Yeah.
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 So in addition to things like going through an app like Drops, run me through right now what a typical day of Dutch learning looks like for you. Like, and maybe we can even break this into a couple different options, depending on how you want to attack this. Like, what is an sure. ideal day of Dutch learning look like for you?
Oh,
what
yeah.
is probably an average day look like for you? And then what is like the minimum viable day? You know, you've got, you're sick, you're, you know, you're busy, you have something
right.
go yeah, bad. Yeah. Like, what are those kind
they're
of
traveling.
Three? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I guess let's start with what I'm actually doing.
Okay.
And so typically I have an online tutor that I work with now. And she's actually Flemish, which is great. And she knows Dutch. So it's the perfect tutor. She's amazing. And I use this platform called Preply. I don't know if you're familiar with it. They just have like online language tutors.
Oh, cool.
And you just kind of meet on that platform and it keeps track of your hours.
P-R-E-P-L-Y?
Yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate name because it can read like Preply as well.
Oh,
which makes me think of toilet paper or something. But it's a great app, Preply.
Preply.
Like prep and then L-Y.
Cool. Yeah.
Anyway, so I meet with her twice a week for about an hour, sometimes
each
45
time?
Minutes.
If
each time. Okay. Yeah. And sometimes I'll change it up, but typically we'll have one session just kind of speaking and just talking about things. Another one is more grammar stuff, learning new verbs or words and things that I'm struggling with or whatever. So kind of get that balance. And then every day I will do my 5 minutes on drops. That's kind of a non-negotiable. That's where it started. Like you said, it's kind of my identity at this point. Mm-hmm. And it helps me kind of review a lot of the words, you know, that I've, you know, learned over the course of using the app. And then, you know, I do a lot of exercises that my tutor asked me to do. So we use a few different textbooks. And then I do a lot of, it's funny. I watch a lot of cartoons mm-hmm. with my son. He's 18 months and I'll read a lot of books that I bought for him / me to read in that language.
Awesome.
And I spend a lot of time doing that, which I don't really count as like hours that I spend, you know, working at this because I'm spending time with my kid and it's fun, you know, both enjoy it.
But that counts what an amazing, high context, fun way to go about this.
Yeah, you don't have to do too much for that. And then, you know, I have my notebook that I almost take everywhere I go with me. And I'm just constantly kind of, you know, reviewing things, looking over things. So it's not like I sit down and I'm always studying, but I like to always have this on me for reference, you know. So it sounds like a lot. I feel like that's pretty close to my ideal situation. I am so busy. I have realistically, I don't know what else I would be doing because I also want it to be enjoyable. If I'm doing too much, I know that I'd be just burning myself out.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun is a really important component, I think, of learning any skill. I mean, obviously not every minute of learning a language is going to be fun, nor getting in shape or learning these memory techniques or climbing mountains. Like there's going to be some suck, but I think on average, if you can make as much of it as inherently enjoyable as possible, you're going to stick with it long enough to do it.
Yeah.
There's a language blogger I really like called Katsumoto, and he has a phrase, fun gets done, mm-hmm. which I think is a really great little, you know, soundbite reminder for myself and others.
Yeah. Another thing that helps a lot is my mother is right there. She lives 20 minutes away from me. We talk every day. So, and not always in Flemish, but she's there when I want to bounce off something I just learned, or we can talk about something funny or weird that I'm thinking about in that language. Right. And that's awesome to have.
That is good. Yeah. So everyone who's listening, you need to go out and find a mother or mother-in-law speaks your target language. And then, that's great.
Yeah.
So what about,
what's nice about that though, is that it's speaking with someone, like even with my tutor, right. Mm-hmm. I feel embarrassed a lot of the time and like I struggle and then I feel bad, you know, it's hard to talk to someone. So a lot of these websites that have kind of like these pen pal situations, or you can talk with others mm-hmm. online, like those are great. I would be so nervous, you know, I guess at the beginning. So it's really nice for me to have my mother who I can say whatever I want
and mistakes.
She will not judge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I mean, again and again and again, when I talk with people or, you know, I also do language coaching. So I'm coaching people.
Okay.
That is usually the one activity that I know they actually need to do and they know they need to do that they're not doing because it's uncomfortable and it's scary. But you can't skip it. Like there's no other, if you want to learn to speak a language, you cannot, you know, study your way there completely. It can help, but you got to do that speaking practice, but it can be scary.
Yeah. One thing that my tutor told me, cause we talked about this problem. Cause at the beginning I was a little reluctant to speak to my mother in it. Cause I felt like I wasn't ready or whatever. But she said, just talk to yourself, right? What's even great is my son, you know, at the time I started, he didn't really speak much. So I just talked to him, you know, and it's like, nobody's judging me.
Yeah.
You know, I just hear myself over and over kind of repeating these things and having these conversations with myself. That helped a lot to kind of at least get more comfortable in how I sound in that language, you know?
Yeah. And getting that practice, you know, the muscle memory practice too. I think that's another thing that people maybe underestimate how important that is. It's not just knowing how to say something in your head or knowing what the sounds mean. It's literally moving your lips and your tongue and your larynx to actually produce those sounds.
Yeah.
It's a muscle that's got to be worked out. Quick tangent on that. So I lived in Japan for 2 years, many years ago. And so I'm not living in a Japanese speaking environment anymore. I don't use Japanese very often in my life, but when I go back and visit, or when I talk to my tutor, usually once a week, when I first started doing that again recently, it was really interesting. I knew exactly what to say. I understood everything, almost everything he was saying, but my mouth was struggling to actually say the words. Like the muscles that speak Japanese had atrophied to the point where I was struggling to just kind of get it out of my mouth and not stumble over myself. And, you know, it took a few days and time, but now it's fine again. But I just thought that was really interesting that literally the muscles themselves had like
kind of. Yeah. I had a similar experience with some of my French. I can remember very clearly, this was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I hadn't been there in a while. I hadn't spoken French much in the previous years. And we went and took a taxi, my wife and I, and we were going to an address that it's pretty tough to say. It's R-O-U, so rue.
Yeah.
See, I even struggle right now. And then it's Ruel.
Uh-huh.
And just saying Ruel, like that's the bad English words. I knew how to say it. And I just went to go say it to the taxi driver and it just came out like, you know? And I was like, wow, let me just write it down for you because right now my mouth doesn't want to say that jumble. So
yeah, it's frustrating, but I think the good news is it comes back much more quickly once you've already had it trained. Those pathways are still there. They've just kind of, my analogy I always use is the jungle has grown over those roads, but the roads are still there underneath.
Sure. And just, sorry, I keep going on tangents, but
I love tangents.
Another situation. Good. This is the coolest kind of story about my French, like you're just saying, there's stuff under there that is kind of planted there, but you kind of need to dig to get there, or certain things need to happen for that to kind of come back to you. I was on a flight. This was even earlier than that previous story, flying to France by myself. Somebody stole stuff from my bag while I was sleeping on the plane.
Whoa.
It's a crazy story. Yeah. There's a whole thing about it. But anyways, the flight, I landed in Paris and went to the police right there. And it was, again, one of these situations that I was a little rusty with my French, hadn't been there in maybe a year or two. But when I sat down to explain my story to the cop, you know, the police guy, the gendarme, I don't know what came over me, but in that moment, I was just like so, not relaxed, but just so wired. And just kind of instinctively, I was able to kind of, I dug up words I'd never, you know, used in such a long time. And my French was great. It was amazing. I was just like almost outside of myself.
Who's speaking? Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it was just because in the moment, you know, my inner tracks of all that foundational French that I had learned over the years kind of had to shine, and it did. It's crazy.
Yeah. I wonder if it's the power of the emotion. I mean, probably you were a bit pissed off, you know, you're sleep deprived, jet lagged. So in a way you'd think that would make things worse, but probably it removes some of your like prefrontal cortex inhibition on yourself.
Yeah.
Kind of like being a little buzzed where you can speak a little more easily often.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Did it all get resolved or was it?
No, man. It was a crazy story. Yeah. No, because he connected to another flight. But he was from Miami, and so I always envision myself
still looking for
picture
him.
His face.
Yeah.
So if I run into him and be like, I can't believe you stole, because he stole, like, what's even crazier, this is like, I had a jersey on, and I put it away before I went to my seat, because I was like a few seats ahead. He was wearing my jersey in the plane, right? Because I remember seeing him at night, and I was like, that's weird. I had the same jersey. And I went back to sleep. And then the next morning when I got my bag, we left the plane. I was like, I had other stuff missing. I was like, no, that guy took my stuff.
He wore it in front of you.
He was wearing my clothes in front of me.
So brazen.
The balls on that guy. Yeah. Wow.
You almost have to commend him.
Catch him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but, you can, yeah, you can meet him and you can, yeah, put some of those
French
mountain climber muscles to work and, you know, lift them up above your head. Carry your ice axe with you and use that. Yeah.
I will.
There you go.
Always keep it with me.
it's on your desk right now, I bet. Yeah. So I want to pull back a little bit to specifically how you're applying your memory techniques. I mean, obviously you get into all the details about how to do it in your book, remember it with an exclamation point. But just maybe we can go over it really quickly, maybe a few basic ones just to kind of whet people's appetite here a little bit. I don't know, you know, if you want to go like, if you want to talk about paths or memory palaces or things like this, but how would you actually go about, for example, learning, you know, a few words that you're having a hard time making them stick? Or this is another one that I've always struggled with, is like remember people's names, especially in a foreign language, because those sounds are just so new. It's just, you have nothing to attach it to. So it's really hard to remember those things.
Right. Yeah. So, especially with vocabulary, it's kind of this process of, I look at it like an equation. So you have one side of the equation, which is the foreign word, and then the other side of the equation, which is the English or your native language definition, right? First of all, I try to strip any kind of characters or letters to the thing and just try to replace both with pictures. And that's kind of the majority of what we do in our memory world, is we think in pictures. Mm-hmm. That's it. So if we're dealing with cards, we turn them into pictures. If we're dealing with numbers, we turn them into pictures. And then it's these sequences of pictures that end up being a lot easier to remember than the actual information itself.
Right.
But you have some kind of way of translating back and forth. And with language, it's not too hard, because usually you can think of a sound or something that it reminds you of or similar to, and then base a picture off of that. So, you know, like, I mean, some, you know, I have a video where I talk about kind of the different kinds of words. Sometimes you have things that sound like a word in English and it actually makes sense. So there's really not much memorization that needs to go there. Sometimes it's kind of an easy, short little word, and that's easy to think of a picture. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it's some really godforsaken long Dutch word and it represents something so simple in English, and it's not as simple as just thinking of a picture. Yeah. You kind of have to massage it. So a good example is like spin. The word spin is a spider, right? So, and I try to draw a bridge across both images, right? So I have a spider and I have some kind of spinning action, right? Mm. So it's just common sense to imagine a spider spinning a web. Right. Mm-hmm. So that way, if I'm thinking in English or hearing in English and we're going to Dutch, you know, when spider comes up, I can't help but think of spin, and that's my word for Dutch, and vice versa. If I hear spin, I'm going to hear or think of the picture of a spinning web by a spider. And there's my link. And the Dutch actually have this great word for, I'll tell you the word for it. It's called Ebruchtje, which means it's a bridge for like a donkey. And it's a small cho, when you put cho at the end, means it's like a small,
like a diminutive,
cute version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Diminutive. So what the word represents is like a mnemonic. And it's kind of talking about how it creates a bridge, you know, for a dumbed down, like donkey ass, right. To remember something easier. Uh-huh. Right. I think that's kind of what they're implying there. And I feel like that's the best description, because you're creating a bridge from two complicated things to make it easy for an ass to cross it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I love it.
And then, so another example, this is a good one. You have a Strausvogel, which is, it's ostrich, okay, in Dutch. And if you break it down, so like Strausvogel, it's a kind of a big word. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really remind me of anything instantly. So if I break it down, and that, you know, some of them I tried to do a little bit of research. Maybe I can learn a little more about parts of the word. And it turns out that vocal, which I know from the Drops app, is a bird. Okay, so that part, that's an easier one. Maybe I already had that in my memory, so I can build off of that. Strauss, I don't really know anything of, but looking up the translation, that actually means like stress. So you have a stressed bird, right, is an ostrich, which is kind of comical. And I like that. For an ostrich, I kind of imagine them to be kind of like highly stressed birds. They put their head in the ground when they're nervous or whatever. And so that just makes sense to me. And it makes it almost funny, memorable in a funny way, for me to help remember that word, you know? So there's a few different ways I go about that, but essentially try to create some pictures and kind of some association, some bridge across to connect them.
And when you say picture, is it fair to say that really it's a story in a sense, or it's a narrative that's encapsulated in an image in your head, but it's not necessarily a still picture like on the wall.
It's kind of a bad word to use. Yeah. But I don't know how really else to say it in one word, but a picture, it needs all of the senses involved or as much as possible. So, you know, if you're just thinking of an ostrich, like a still photo ostrich, that's not what I mean. I mean, like I'm there with the bird. I can imagine his fluttering wings.
You smell it.
Smell it. If, even if I touched it, the how coarse its feathers would be, or something, or dusty. Maybe it's attacking me. You know, I add some kind of emotional movement to it.
Right.
That's really what I mean by picture.
Cool. Yeah.
Because we remember that better.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talked a little earlier about you know how I learned kanji, Japanese kanji, and it was very similar to this. You know, you make a story out of each character, instead of trying to remember the individual strokes, you're remembering basically a little narrative, a little movie. And I do remember the ones that I had a really hard time remembering were when I was not making a compelling enough story. There weren't enough senses involved. It was too static. It was too banal. But when I started making these outrageous, hilarious, terrifying, I mean, definitely, you know, sexuality too, for example, you know, we remember those things very well. We don't have to go too down that far that road. I think people could figure that out themselves. But then those ones stuck, and those are the ones I still remember today. You know, if I come across a kanji I haven't seen in a while, and then I remember the story, and then boom, I'm good. So
And what happens is, so you know, when I'm using Drops to memorize all their words, it's like 2,400 words in Dutch at least. After a while, you know, like you might think, that's tough. 2,400 different pictures, associations, like some words are going to be similar to others. Like how are you, you're going to get confused and you run out. It's like, actually, no. And by practicing this, you actually get really good at coming up with it quicker and with less, less requirements, you know, to make that picture stick. So at the beginning, you know, you really sit there and you, like you said, picture all these emotions and colors and senses. But after a while, your brain kind of figures out what it likes, what it needs, and you get a bit quicker at it.
Right.
And it's almost like a quick, you grab those things and you can move right along to the next one.
And I think it's also important to point out here that because you're thinking in pictures and images and feelings, that can happen at lightning speed. You're not going through the pace of words. Like if you were to talk out that story that you made, it would take you 10 seconds or whatever. But because it's happening inside your head, it can be... just
like it can be rapid, instantaneous almost,
speed of thought, speed of electricity, I guess. So just to go a little bit detailed here, so as you're in the Drops app, for example, you know, the little ball drops down, bloop, and then it presents this new word. Are you creating that story right then, like right when you're hearing it pronounced and then seeing the image and what the word is?
Yeah, exactly. Right there. And the nice thing about the app is, you know, it reviews the hell out of all the words. So in the case that I see the word again in a few moments and I don't quite remember exactly what it was, there's usually, you can figure it out from the options they have, and it helps kind of remind you of it. Or you realize, okay, I didn't have that good enough. Let me try something a little stronger, or let me retry that completely with a different image. So it gives you a lot of opportunity to kind of reinforce that, I think.
Absolutely. So I want to change gears a little bit now. We've talked a lot about sort of how you go about attacking vocabulary, which, not to get too technical with linguistic speak, but, you know, this would be declarative memories, basically. So
yeah.
On the procedural memory side of learning actual like grammar and syntax and how words work together, it's, in my experience, a very different beast. So have you figured out any memory techniques or ways you can better internalize or remember things more on the structure side? Or is that just not what this is for?
Right. So, and it's, you know, that's kind of, so of course my approach was, how can I hack this with my memory techniques? And, you know, with the vocab, it seemed pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
The learning like conjugations, kind of how to piece things together, the different rules and stuff, word order. That's a bit tougher. There were certain things, you know, maybe certain mistakes I make a lot, that have rules or some, exceptions that I just keep missing. Those you can maybe encode. And what I might do is put them in a picture form in a memory palace, just so I have it in my mind rather than always on paper. But that doesn't still mean that I'm going to be perfect at that every time, because I
or
still
retrieve
have to
it in real time right away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I think helps about storing some of those rules in a memory palace is it allows me to kind of think about them, review them, kind of out of the context of speaking, just kind of going through things procedurally as a review, and to just be more familiar with it. Right. But ultimately I think the next step, which has been my next step after learning those words, is really just constant practice.
Right.
And I haven't really found much use for my memory techniques in that process, because it's really just about that muscle memory in a way.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate, you know, because people don't like to hear that. They say, you got to practice? Shoot, you know?
No, I want a magic pill. Yeah, give me the Matrix thing, you know, plugging it back in my head.
Yeah. Right. But I think it's always about review and being exposed to the language a lot, as much as you can, in fun ways, interesting ways, so that you aren't, you know, you don't hate your life, but that you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just you just got to repeat and practice. And, that's kind of been what I've been doing for the second part. And of course, reviewing a lot of the stuff I have memorized.
Sure.
But it's mostly been getting comfortable just speaking it, you know, and practicing it.
Yeah. And I think the good news is that, you know, our brains evolved to be able to internalize and figure out these patterns on its own. You know, if it gets to your point, if it gets enough exposure and enough practice using it, it'll happen. And I think
that's exactly. I mean, it's just like, that's what I try to do, is just present myself in front of the language in as many different ways as I can. First of all, to keep it interesting, but also it's just fun to watch my brain, like, just make sense of it all kind of organically.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting, because some days, you know, I feel like I'm stuck. I don't know as much as I thought I did. And then other days you're just like, it clicks. I don't know what it is, but you know, it comes through that practice, and it's kind of, which is where I think that consistency part that we talked about is so crucial, because, you know, if you can just consistently face yourself with a language, you know, a little more than the 5 minutes and drops, and in different ways through different mediums, hearing it, watching it, talking with people, writing it.
Which you can do anywhere. And this is a common objection anywhere. People have is like, oh, I would love to learn Dutch, but, you know, I can't just get up and move to the Netherlands, or I would love to learn Japanese, but I'm stuck here in, you know, middle of nowhere, America or whatever. Yeah. It's like, do you have an internet connection? Yes. Yeah. Okay. You're good. Like,
I will say though that, you know, I was in, Brussels recently, and the difference in that exposure the improvement I made in those 4 days was insane.
Of course.
Compared to just what I try to do at home.
Absolutely.
But it just shows you that just being around it as much as possible is worth everything. Yeah. And if you can kind of find ways to hack that, right? Like even if you're just, you find an app on your phone that's the radio, right? And on your travel to work, you just listen to the radio in Flemish. That's part of it. You don't have to think to do that, you know?
One thing I do every single day, and I know this is probably extreme, but you know, I'm right now trying to balance three languages. I'm trying to maintain Japanese, improve my Mandarin, and learn Spanish basically from zero.
Nice.
And so every, basically I have a, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday is Japanese. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday is Spanish. And then Sunday is my kind of fun day with Mandarin. But I change my phone interface language every single day to that target language. And so no matter what happens, just going through the normal course of my day, whether it's using maps, talking to Siri, you know, using the music app, you know, listening to a podcast, every one of those apps then is in that language. And so I'm learning and reinforcing all these words in context.
That's a great idea.
And granted, I already knew how to use my iPhone really well. And so I wouldn't recommend this if somebody's trying a new device, you know, get used to your device and then switch it and know how to switch it back if it's too much. You know? But anyway, that's a little like kind of hack I've been doing.
So what, every morning?
Every morning, first thing I wake up, turn off my alarm, which, you know, the alarm itself is in that language from yesterday. So I have to know like, wait, is this pause or is this like stop, you know, and then I go in and I, go into the settings, change the language. And I have, you know, that is something I do every day. And it's, yes, sometimes it's annoying. Sometimes it's frustrating when I'm like, no, don't know exactly what I'm doing right away. But I basically am deciding not to decide. I'm just making it a default thing I do. And it's really helped a lot.
I like that. I might steal that idea from you.
Do you have an iPhone or an Android or
iPhone?
iPhone makes it super easy. I mean, Android can do it easily too, but I find iPhone is like super simple to do it. You just go into general settings, like I think it's language and region. And then you just tap on the current language, find Dutch in the list and boom, you're good to go.
Wow. Yeah. Now, one thing I do is I have a keyboard for my texting that is in that language. So when I want to maybe text my mom in Dutch, I'll switch to that. So it recognizes words or helps finish things for me. That's really helpful to see that when I text in that language, you know?
Right. How different is the alphabet? Are there letters in Dutch that we don't have in English or vice versa?
No, I think it's the same. I'm trying to think. There might be a couple.
Are there like diacritic marks or anything? Like
No.
That's cool.
It's really, I mean, they have some, just the pronunciation of is the word diphthongs? Is that right?
Diphthongs,
Diphthongs, are weird, but you get used to that. But the characters are the same. They may not have X or Q or something, but...
but those just make the same sounds as two other letters we have anyway, so...
Exactly, yeah. But I was just thinking, I don't think I learned the alphabet in the language. I should ask my mom for that song.
that's alphabet song. Yeah. Cool. Well, just kind of to wrap up, if somebody's listening to this today, they struggle with memory in general. They're frustrated. They can't remember either foreign words, phone numbers, names of people they meet. Maybe they want to learn language and haven't started because they think, well, forget it. I have a terrible memory. I'm never going to be able to learn a language. What advice would you give that person? And what is something they can do literally today to start feeling some immediate tangible progress in their memory?
Yeah, I think a big part of people's hesitation to want to memorize a lot of things or things that involve a lot of memorization is because it's tedious. It's not really fun. But I make it fun, and so do all of these memory athletes. The reason we're sitting there for hours memorizing numbers, it's not because we are a bit nerdy, we're not masochists. Yeah. It's because we're actually having fun, believe it or not, because inside of our heads, what we're seeing, what's playing out is the best movie ever, you know, with all the associations and things that we love that make us laugh, make us cry, make us angry. In some randomized order, that's just incredible to watch. And if you pair it with these memory palaces, you're even putting them in places that you've designed or that you, are meaningful to you. A lot of my memory palaces are childhood homes, which probably don't exist anymore, or someone lives in them and I'll never see them again. Mm-hmm. So the only way I can see them is by accessing them there. And I love that. So my short answer here is memory techniques can be fun. And I think when you try it out, it's so silly and bizarre. It almost feels like this will never work. But once you get the hang of it and you try it for a few vocabulary words and just see the fun that it is and how sticky it can be, it almost feels like a superpower, like a little hack. And mm-hmm. I hope that if people try that, which they can immediately, just take a language that you're interested in, find, you know, 5-10 words or something online. I don't know. You could probably easily do that. And then try this game. It's a game, right? Come up with a picture for both sides as weird as possible and connect them with that donkey bridge, right? And I feel like as you get that skill down and you get better at it and it feels more fun, then you'll be able to do more. And again, these apps, I feel like I've seen a bunch of these language learning apps. Some I think are good in there's certain ways.
Yeah.
I'm partial to Drops just because that's what I started with and I really like their approach.
It's really well done. It's beautifully designed. It's clean. Yeah.
And I think those are crucial components to kind of hooking you in to what your goal is learn this friggin' language. Do it every day. So,
yeah. And it's, you know, apps like that are highly gamified and they've been very smart to engineer in just enough hits of dopamine to keep it coming back, which if it's Facebook or Instagram or some of these other apps that are using that same psychological hack to steal your attention, I have problems with that. But if it's learning a language, why not leverage that?
It's not a problem. Exactly. Yeah. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I wish you luck and speed and ironclad memory for this Dutch mission.
You.
We'll have to check in again once you've hit the year mark and see how things have gone.
Yeah. And then another thing, if anybody wants to ask me more about my techniques or how my progress is going, you can always go to my website. It's nelsondellis.com. And on my YouTube channel, I make a lot of videos. Some are about language too. So
awesome. I'll put those in the show notes. Also a link to the book, Remember It.
Yeah, thank you.
And then also you're featured in a Netflix documentary. So I'll throw that in the show notes and
awesome.
You can do it, everybody. There are ways, as you said in your about page, you're born with an average memory and now you're a 4x US memory champion. Yeah. So
how nuts is that? I would have never thought that. It almost seems like a joke, but here I am. So
awesome. Well done. And I look forward to starting to do a little bit more of these kind of memory things in my own language adventures.
Awesome.
I've kind of resisted parts of this because I had probably a cartoon understanding of what they are and how to use them. So
Okay. Well, good luck.
Thank you so much. All right. Yeah, we'll be in touch.
Yep. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much for listening. For show notes, go to languagemastery.com/show. And if you haven't already, I would highly appreciate a review in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. And if you're learning Mandarin, go to ChineseMastery.com, put in your email, and you'll get notified when my upcoming Master Mandarin guide is available. And you'll also get a 25% discount on the digital version when that launches on April 6th. So stay tuned for more. All right, we'll see you next Language Mastery Monday.